Now recording. We're live. All right. Good evening, everybody. This is the Loose Screws podcast, the loosest and screwiest Elite Dangerous podcast on the internet. This is episode number 231 for April 25th, 2024.
33010.
Timing was just a little bit off there tonight. I am Commander Nurgle. Joining me tonight are Commander Looming Wind.
Hello, everybody.
Commander Grover Kiwi from Down Under.
Greetings, upside down.
Commander Indigo.
Or hello, Commander
friends. Indigo.
That works too.
And Commander Oblivious.
Scraping the bottom of the barrel this week.
Just because it's alphabetical order, it is what it is. All right. Because we have plenty of game-related things to talk about tonight, we're going to skip right ahead and get a squad update in. So, Commander Blooming Wind, if you can fill us in on what's going on.
Oh, absolutely. Screw Space is very busy yet again. So we just landed in TT58343 from our expansion out of Mykoro. We're just holding a place there because of the Treaty of Kalarum with Project Elite. Our plan was for them to expand there, but they're not ready to expand anywhere yet. So we just told them we accidentally expanded. We accidentally violated the treaty. All is right with the world. We'll just keep it warm for you. We are currently expanding out of 6 Andromeda. Our current target is Uchigan, which kind of sucks, but we're trying to divert it to NLTT 52560, which is where we thought we were going, but somebody expanded just before we did. So we're just going I'm going to have to do some social engineering in that system. Long talked about unstarted Kopitak expansion. That's our next one. And we're doing it as a favor to our friends, the Brothers of Terra Mater, because we love being in the same system with them. And then conquering Kolwaya. Yes, we are losing our current election in Kolwaya 2-0. Somebody doesn't like us. We want to win that election, and it is our top BGS priority. There are wars in Grams, Zions, and Yenti. Thank you, Poon, for workings of the Zion's War tonight. We really appreciate it. And then we want to put out our weekly reminder. Kalarum is quarantined. Leave it alone. Let it burn. Let it fester. Let it rot. That's what it needs to do right now.
And to just to expand on that, that's not just stay out of it because we don't want to touch it. It's stay out of it because there's actually a plan to try to make it better, and it involves not touching it. And if anybody really wants to know what that means, I'll be happy to explain it in person. But trust me, leaving it alone and letting it burn all the way down is actually the best course of action right now.
All right. That sums up the squad update.
And if anybody wants any extra details, there is always the standing orders post in the standing orders section of the Discord for all of the expanded details on that. There were some Galnet updates. I'm going to run over them briefly. Oya blew up. Yay!
There was much rejoicing.
Ramta developed some shitty way to prevent the anti-Guardian field from destroying one Guardian module by making it worse. Which is the summary for that. On the Thargoid Warfront, AXI has targeted Hadad next for termination. I understand there is quite a bit of work that needs to be done before we're ready to actually blow up Hadad. So keep an eye out for that and start working on their priorities if AX is your jam. So
has anyone figured out how long it's going to take them to get to...
Well, let's see.
I've heard 4 weeks, possibly.
Let's pull up DCOH and take a look at good old Hadad. Hadad currently has 50 controlled systems. So, yeah, I'm going to go with probably a minimum of 3 weeks, probably more like four, to get it to a point where it can be blapped.
Blapped?
Blapped.
Sounds about right.
Yeah,
technical term.
All right, so they had a live stream this week, and they made some other announcements. So let's serve this one up first. They announced that the Python Mark II, along with some updates to the game store, is coming. It will be released for the general public on August 7th. However, if you have 16,250 ARCs burning a hole in your pocket, you can buy early access on May 7th.
That's so about three shares of stock. Everyone who knows.
Of Frontier stocks, yeah. And so for people who are doing the math, the difference between May 7th and August 7th is 3 months, 90 days. So if you want to plop down three shares and change of Frontier stock, you get a 90-day head start on a Mark II.
A one trimester.
One trimester head start on the Mark II.
Yes.
There's been a lot of stuff on the internet this week about pay to win for being able to, and for the pre-built kits, which we'll talk about later. But I really don't see 90 days early access as anything close to pay to win.
How do you win at Elite?
Well, that's a completely different conversation. But that was something I was going to bring up later. But I mean, there's no winning. And how does 90 days early access equate to pay to win anyway? I don't think it does. My personal opinion, but.
No, I mean, I've been trolling the other sources of internet other than the Loose Screws Discord. And
what?
On the Facebook forums, there's all sorts of ridiculosity about this.
Well, it's Facebook.
Well, I mean, it is
Facebook. You make the Facebook.
Yeah, no, I know. But but it's just one of those things where I'm like, as you said, you know, I thought this was a great idea.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I paid $60 for Odyssey and for the original Horizons when I bought everything, and I've played since the beginning of the pandemic, so it's like 4 years, and other people have played 10 years on $60. Yeah. You know, maybe buy some arcs here and there or whatever because you wanted that really cool skin, and it was like Black Friday or something. But you know, I mean, you know, $9. It's $9.75 to get this spaceship 3 days or 3 months early. And I mean, I don't think this spaceship or the ship kits that are coming out are going to be so unbalancing that it's going to turn some brand new player, you know, into Butthole Jenkins. I mean, I just don't see it, you know? So,
and as you already mentioned, there is no winning at Elite.
Yeah, exactly.
And especially in a universe where it's an open sandbox and we all play together except for the people who are hiding in Sola. All the money in the world is not going to buy you piloting skill.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even if we did have a real pay-to-win situation where somebody could plump down money and buy really nice ships, they still don't know how to land.
Right. Or fly with flight assist off. I mean,
yeah,
it's just baffling that some of these folks were just like really upset over this. And then, I mean, but people get upset over anything. And I think some people were just locked into the argument that it's play to win and you cannot change my mind because you are paying something to get something that has an impact on the game.
Yeah.
Other than, oh, my ship's got a pretty colors or something. You know, I mean, people would argue the same thing about Midnight Black. The Midnight, that matte black paint, no one can see you in space because space is also black.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, this is so it gives you an advantage, but it's not like a real advantage.
I'm calling it play to win.
Play to win.
And just go that route. But yeah, I agree. I've heard of a lot of play to win, But and I've listened to Yonex and like you, I've visited a lot of different locations. Well, you know, you got to get all facets of the argument together. And there's some good arguments being made, but they're usually situational. It's like one commander against another in this particular situation. Yeah, okay, it turns out to look like a play to win. But in the overall spectrum, in this giant world that Elite is, no, it's not a pay to win. It's what it is. It's a means, I believe, for FDev to get some cash flow and survive so they can keep this thing going.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing. Which is also interesting because we've heard people screaming about, I would spend money if they would do this, and I would spend money if they would do that, and then they do it, and then they scream, well, now it's play to win. So, you can't make folks happy.
No, you can't.
I think about the word between. With regard to FDev and the player base and just the way things have progressed over the years in Elite, and the fact that at almost every turn they've avoided the ways that game companies alienate people and make money simultaneously. Like you said, we've often talked about the things that they could do that we'd be happy to pay them for. So I think it's encouraging that what they've done seems like about the mildest sort of foray into making more money on their game. And the fact that there are diehards in the player base who are dissatisfied even with that, if anything, is kind of a sign of the standard that the game has maintained so far, you know, that as you see other games kind of getting destroyed by that sort of thing, 10 years in, Elite is still barely even trying to make money off of itself. You know, the only company I can think of trying less to monetize their game is like Hello with No Man's Sky, but they're doing things like moving to Switch, which makes them a bunch of new money, which Frontier obviously isn't doing. So, it was inevitable that they would have to find some more ways to keep paying for this game that we love. So,
Frontier tried to do that with the consoles, right? But that blew
up.
So now they've got to try something different.
It's interesting the way the release notes read and the way they talk about it. It sounds like it really is almost more like a rebuild of the in-game store from the ground up, to include things like being able to buy seasonal paints like Midnight Black and like the Stygian and all the other fancy ones year round, but then also the ship kits maybe if the one-on-one competitive aspect of the game were more central to it, you know, there might be some concern about getting an advantage. But if it's something anybody can buy 3 months later, maybe in a year's time, if Power Play 2 takes off, there's something different about the direct competitive nature of gameplay in Elite. But right now, where there are people still flying Cobra Mark 4s that I can't buy, I'm not going to be particularly bothered if somebody who's got the time to explore the new ship a little bit before I get around to it, it's not going to be a big impact on my game. It's so hard to find actual other commanders flying in open anyway. You know, it's not like you'll be swamped by a dozen morons flying Python Mark IIs with new guns nobody else can get, suddenly ruining your game.
Mm. Right.
And as a commander that does have a Cobra Mark IV, like I see no problem with this. This is it's a good way for Frontier to make some money without a huge amount of extra effort. So imagine if they put a bunch of effort into different skins for fleet carrier interiors and that may or may not sell. And so that money that they use to create that asset may go to 10% of players or something, or 10% of players might pick it up. And so that's their whole base for that particular asset. But here, they're creating it anyway, and it's and they're just allowing that early access that is a acceptable kind of practice in game development.
Yeah, And I can't, it was either Commander Indigo or Oblivious who said a few minutes ago that they've found a way, like most other game companies, to the least bad way to both alienate some members of the player base and make money on their game. And I mean, that's really true, because the problem is for the past 10 years, they've only done one half of that, which is alienate the player base.
Right.
Even if people yell and scream for the 3 months that they can't get a Python, as soon as that's over, it's over.
Yeah.
Anybody can get one, and everybody will already know what the clever metas are around this new ship. And
it's only taken them 10 years to make some attempts to really monetize the game. And I'm going to use that as a segue to go to topic number two, jumpstart pre-built ship packs. This is what they announced. You could buy them with ARCs. They come with upgraded and or unlocked modules, themed cosmetics. There'll be pigeonholed into certain types. I know they talked about a laser mining jumpstart and an AX Chieftain jumpstart. Then they said that the Python Mark II will also have some jumpstart packs when it's ready to go. This is another one that a lot of people have talked about, pay to win. They didn't say these were going to be engineered ships. I've got a really strong feeling that when they say upgraded modules, they mean it comes with A-rated modules instead of the standard C-rated.
Have you not seen the specs for them yet? They released the specs for two of them.
Oh, did they? No,
yeah,
I haven't.
Yeah, they're interesting. There are some engineered modules.
Really?
For the most part, it's just an appropriately kitted out ship. Let me get to the end of that. So in terms of the core modules, it is an appropriately kitted out ship. In terms of the specialized stuff, they're both wrong in a way that would give you a head start and also force you to do some of your own work to make them into the ships they're supposed to be. For instance, the laser miner has, among other things, a pulse wave analyzer, which doesn't do you any good if you're laser mining.
Right.
Likewise, the AX one comes with, maybe it's even already in the show notes, but it's like AX multi-cannons and unlocked Gauss cannons and a Titan torpedo launcher. So
and
you
it
get
runs
something
at, otherwise. It runs at 30% heat. Over
30% heat. and it comes with a non-thermal vent laser, which is not going to do you any good at all either. So it's like in both cases, they get you some of the unlocked stuff. Oh, the minor one comes with those old Torval mining lasers, right? The CG ones. So it's weird. It's like
For two size one mining, because I mean, all the T6 has is two size one hard points anyway. So you might as well have the long range Torval. I mean, what are they going to do? Give you like the mining lances? And then someone would have a stroke. Like, just stroke out. Whoever's going to pledge Torval anyway?
But, exactly. There are some treats in there though. Like you get the AX one, and I think you basically end up with a Chieftain that's got G5 dirty drag thrusters.
Yes.
That's pretty cool. I mean, that's worth investing in. And something that comes with a genuine benefit in, you know, competitive terms. So you're not getting nothing for what you spend, but at the same time, anybody you're gonna be, you know, you get the AX one and you decide to turn it into a PvP Chieftain Predator. Anybody who's gonna have a chance against you anyway is gonna have dirty drag thrusters. You know, it's not like game breaking sorts of things, but there are definitely hours of gameplay and grind saved by the two kits that they've described so far.
See, I don't know how I feel about engineered modules. Let me rephrase that. I know how I feel.
Well, how do you feel? Tell us how you feel, Nurgle.
I'm not a fan of any way of this type of purchase of engineered modules. The engineering grind, I think, is there for a reason. It is literally a game tutorial.
Yeah, I agree.
Order to unlock the engineers, you have to do a little bit of everything.
And in the absence of actual in-game training, that's, I mean, a huge chunk of what I know about how to play the game came from having to do all the engineer stuff.
Right.
Yeah. I don't believe that any of the pre-engineered modules include unlocks of the engineer.
Oh, I would hope not.
So presumably you would still have to do those things if you wanted more than the one that you'd bought with your...
Yeah, and that definitely makes it less bad.
Just one, right? I don't think there's a lot of engineered stuff. I think it's like the miner might have like an engineered FSD, maybe like a G3. I should probably look it up and see what the actual...
Yeah, if it's like one engineered module that really relieves...
Yeah, it basically is one module or two modules per chip.
Yeah,
so the chip can actually function.
Right, like one...
It's not all A-rated either.
No.
Engineered, right. And then a couple of things that you would have to unlock, you know, like the Gauss cannons or something like that. In that case, too, like for the AX one, you're not going to use the Gauss cannons at a Titan. So it's interesting that in both the cases, it's like you kind of get a laser miner, but if you want to do core mining, you've already got a couple of things you'll need for that. And, you know, you can get the AX one and go after a Titan, but if you really want to do anything worthwhile, then you're going to end up swapping some modules and unlocking some other stuff. And,
well,
and they're immunized. They're Ramta immunized.
Oh, that's right. The Gauss cannons are.
Which nobody wants. So I think they threw them in because they had to have a clearance sale in the mean system.
It's kind of like universal business principle that you're going to end up getting something that either you pay more for than you should or you don't actually want.
Yeah. Well,
I add into all of that the interesting little piece on it. There's no rebuy.
Really?
Kit one. If you buy the ship with ARX.
There's no rebuy. So my theory on this, thinking about it, so maybe EpDev is trying to deal with a situation they've looked at. They've seen new players come on board, and they see a lot of them stick around for just a set amount of time, and then they leave, and you don't see any in-game anymore. Why? And they've got some feedback, and it's because these commanders have limited time, and they see the grind associated with engineering, and it just doesn't create a value equation for them. So now if you hand them these pre-built, now they get a little more taste of what's on the other side of the grind. Maybe that makes them a little more sticky. They'll stay with the game. They don't have if they go and blow up and find out, hey, I got to do something about that 30% heat. I keep blowing up, but I haven't lost all my credits. I'm not going to rage quit. Now maybe I'll go do what I need to do to improve the ship and get past that hump. That seems insurmountable for some folks.
That's a really good point. Yeah. And I think it also, it's funny. It is because Elite is the kind of game that it is perhaps a rare game industry scenario where pay to get stuff of value in the game doesn't actually constitute the dreaded pay to win because it gets you to like C- or C+. You know, it's like if your big strain and the reason you bailed on Elite 4.5 years ago is that you kept getting blown up in your E6 and losing all your credits and having to start over because you kept forgetting to fly with a rebuy or something like that. Now all of a sudden you've got a T6 with some decent modules on it. And if you blow up, it only costs you whatever modules you've added. You know, all of a sudden that element of losing early in the game when you care about your rebuy. Like, it feels like an advantage to say, you don't have a rebuy for that ship. When's the last time any of us gave a damn about a rebuy, right?
It's
like an elementary school problem. And so this allows the chance to pay some money to skip to, like, not even freshman year, you know, to get past, like, third and fourth grade.
This just gets you past orientation.
You're never going to beat somebody in the game because you skip the extra 3 weeks of only having a sidewinder, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, we're going to see. I do agree with all of that.
Yeah.
One thing I'd kind of be that would worry me is if they bought out some ships that required some Guardian modules. Or that included some Guardian modules, like I can imagine a exploration ship, if it came with a
frameshift booster.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the AX one does, right? Those Gauss cannons are Guardian unlocked.
Those are the RAM. Those are the RAM TOM modified ones.
Right, but I mean, just to get them in the first place, don't you have to get?
Well, but it comes with one RAM TA crap modified one, and it doesn't give you the unlock. So
right.
And you know, both of those ships, they'll do what they're set up to do. They won't do it particularly well, but they'll do it.
Right.
And I think that's kind of what they were looking for. You know, because there's no way I would build a laser mining ship that looked. And I am a miner. There's no way I would build one anything like that ship. But that ship will get you laser mining. And you can learn how to do it in it. So.
Yep.
And you could build a decent one on top of it if you...
I would argue that you're never going to build a decent one. I would argue you're never going to build a decent laser miner on a T6.
You're okay.
But you can improve that one.
Yeah.
And it's a stepping stone to a T7.
Hopefully it's a stepping stone to a Python.
I wonder if you could sell it
for zero. If there's no sell value.
If there's no revalue. Yeah.
Because I have a few free ships. I mean, I have a couple of free.
I have
CGs.
My Vulture is a zero rebuy.
Ooh, nice.
So, which was great. Thank you, Winking Cat, wherever you are, for my zero rebuy Vulture. Nice. So basically, it's just my modules that I'm paying for every time I die in it, which I haven't because it's a Vulture and very hard to kill. So, the Gudamaya, the Explorer ships, the Dolphin, and the Orca that I wanted a computer. They're zero. So.
Yeah,
there, a few of us have a few ships running around that, and couriers. I mean, we have a few ships running around with a zero price on the frame, but then you start modifying it. And I'll tell you, when they start modifying these, they're going to have that sticker shock. I thought it was free. And you're going to have people salty about that. And it's like, well, out of the box, it was free.
Yeah, the cheapest part of the whole thing is free.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, basically, yeah. You start putting some, you know, big A-rated FSDs and stuff in there, it gets pretty pricey.
Yeah.
I think it does. I mean, it does seem like that's the way they put it across in the communications too, that it is, they're about getting a jump start, not about getting some kind of specialization. You know, they're not,
they literally call them jump starts.
Yeah. They're Playmobil ships.
Not in the name. Yeah.
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 All right. Well, let's use that to jump over to the proposed engineering rework. So this is not, they were very clear that this is not the new feature we're getting later in the year, that this is just part of, you know, ongoing game maintenance. And I think part of their ideas came from, God, more than a year ago when they had asked for feedback on engineering. And they said that some of the things they're looking at, the purpose of this is to make engineering, and this is a quote, more accessible and predictable, which is not necessarily a bad thing. But some of the things they're looking at are reducing the number of materials required for engineering, or increasing the payout of engineering materials from missions. And for the ground stuff, they're looking at backpack capacity. So I think... Since we were talking about engineering briefly earlier, and engineering is kind of a pet peeve of mine, reworking the way engineering works to both, as they said, make it more accessible and predictable is absolutely essential to the long-term health of this game. In my mind, they have to remove the random rolls from engineering. You just have to. There's no point in having random rolls. And then there needs to be some form of either reducing the materials required, not by a lot, but by some, or increasing the amount you get missions would be great, but from sources, either one of those does the same thing. And then tweaking the exchange rate for material trading so that it's not just horrendously painful to cross trade for the things you can't get. And I really think that's all they need to do.
First two bullets where they talk about reducing the material requirements for engineering, which they could still leave the random rolls in there, but instead of 68 of this particular material, you only need 3. That kind of negates the need to get rid of the random roll. You're still going to take way less materials to get there. And the other piece is if they're increasing the material outlay that you're getting as far as rewards are concerned. Both of those seem to equate to still reducing the amount of time you're grinding materials for the engineering sequence.
Right.
Yeah, and in the description, they do also talk about making it more approachable and predictable. And the use of that last word really, I mean, I'd be stunned if they didn't, if by predictable they meant getting rid of the RNG for the chip engineering, because it's just a leftover of that point where you could get different results from engineering, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Having it work the way it does now is kind of a weird, silly leftover thing, and it's the one thing in the whole system that isn't really predictable. So hopefully that's.
I think if they standardize the roles, make it, because I mean, that would be great. Because, I mean, you know, there are times where my G5, I roll 7. And there are times where I roll 11. Yeah. And so it's hard for me to predict how much in the way of G5 level mats I need. Right. And it would be nice to kind of fix the material trader a little bit. But as far as rewards and whatnot, all they really need to do is add raw materials as something you could earn as a reward, because honestly, just playing the game between, you know, biotech conductors and, you know, basically killing everything in space, I get manufactured material. I scan enough stuff that, you know, I have plenty of data. You know, and I'm never short on data. It's the damn raw materials that it's like, crap, I got to go out to the shards and spend an entire weekend out in the shards, you know, once or twice a year, which again is only once or twice a year. But all they need to do is throw raw materials as a reward for missions and things like that. And it fixes it. It honest to God.
That'd be nice.
I agree.
I don't see the point in standardizing roles. I just want to get rid of them. I want to be able to go engineer and say,
here's where the roles come in. Here's where I would keep the roles, but I would say G5 is 10 roles of this many material, because you have people like Trax who it's like, I want 6 roles worth of, you know, power plant, because if I go 7, my heat's going to go too much. I mean, you've got some people that are so in the weeds that if you push a button and it goes from G4 to G5, all of the gradient people, all of the spectrum people are going to be really pissed, because they want a G4 and a half something for some reason.
You can keep the tiers and not actually have the random component to it, though.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Exactly. That's what I mean by the roles. Gotcha.
Yeah,
fix.
Yeah, I think that makes sense then.
I'd want to go and say, give me a grade 4 of this, and this is what it's cost, because I can go to a tech broker and get a pre-engineered thing, and it tells me exactly what it's going to cost.
Yeah, that would be nice, too.
It's an interesting little nuanced corner of that kind of junction of game design and behavioral economics that leads to some bad feelings where they just don't make any sense, because you know, a lot of the time the difference between the last 2 or 3 rolls before you get to G5 is nothing, right? You might get an extra 50 meters of range out of 6 kilometers. You know, it makes
and it takes so long.
Except your completeness. But if you end up one roll short, it could ruin your afternoon, right? And then to make matters worse, you realize that you have to go to the traders and cash in six of something that it took you a long time to get just to get one more thing for that role. And so supporting nothing of real value in gameplay, right? There's no real compelling reason for either of those things to work exactly the way they do. And they just happen to line up in such a way that people get especially butthurt about things that have so little game impact and could be fixed in a way that makes people feel better without having any real impact on the game, right? It's not really going to change what people's ships are like. It'll just make people less pissed off about the last 20 minutes of the process.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Now, Grover, if I told you every time you push that damn button, you're getting an arc because you are, does that help? So, yeah, then it's like I have to push it 10 times. I get 10 arcs. That's like 6/10 of a cent. American. I don't know what that's in Kiwi dollars.
Engineering for arcs. Go.
Probably about $300.
Oh, there you go.
Given now. Well, how many shears? Yeah. Now, I go to an engineer and I've got blooming five multi-cannons that I want to upgrade. There goes my night.
Yeah. It does take a little while pushing that button.
It would be really nice to say, I just want to go ahead and max it. What's it going to cost me?
Yeah.
I would be down for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like to be able to look up on Idiocracy Materials Helper and build your little wish list and say, okay, I'm going to go do these things. And I know I need this many of these materials. And then discover that, oh, wait, no, I ended up too shy because of the stupid random numbers.
Yeah.
Everything else about it, except for that random number part, I think makes perfect sense and works just fine. But,
yeah.
And if you're listening, can you pepper a few more pharmaceutical isolators around the place?
They don't exist.
Thanks.
Just come do
I need
the
a few.
They show up as
Rover, just come do assassination missions with me. There are plenty of pharmaceutical isolators. Every time you kill an elite anaconda or every time you kill an elite Corvette,
real good
they
chance.
Drop them. Yeah.
Yeah. Real good chance for.
I will do that.
And that's probably something we should do one night. Getting off topic here, we should probably do team up for wing assassination missions.
Piranha assassination missions.
Ooh, yeah. Ooh, I like that.
In Addis.
No, not in Addis. Piranhas, yes. Adders, no. No Adder death squad for the three-man assassination team all in grade 5 engineered anacondas. No, not in the udders, no.
We did all right with the anacondas last night, didn't we?
Oh, no, they were easy because they're slow.
They were slow and more strict of us.
Yeah, it's sort of when you get like the medium ships that are fast and there's a bunch of them at once, that's kind of when it gets a little interesting. But
it's a little hairy. Yeah. Although I will say, I have done my solo kill an elite anaconda in my Piranha. All 25 minutes of that fight, I think I went through its shield like 7 times before I got the shield generator down. And I'm happy to be able to say I did it. I never want to do it again.
Yeah, I've done a few in my Vulture, but it's a Vulture. It's not a true Piranha. Yeah. So
yeah, that's not a Piranha. That's a that's a much bigger fish.
It's a Barracuda.
It's a Barracuda. There you go. All right. So the last big topic
just before we move away from engineering, I went back and double checked, and the only engineered module in either of those jumpstart kits is the thrusters on the AX version.
Oh, cool.
You get the Gauss cannons, which means you don't have to get those unlocked from the Guardian tech broker, and then you get the modified mining lasers, which means you don't have to get a permit unlock and then the tech broker recipe part. But the only engineered thing anywhere in those is the size 6 G5 dirty drag thrusters.
And we know Lark Shadow's not going to get the AX combat jumpstart because it's got dirty drives instead of clean.
Yeah. and you know, that makes sense because the one thing you really need for AX combat is speed.
Speed.
Yep. So that does make sense. Even though it runs so damn hot, they're going to have no trouble targeting you. But
I think the only thing anyone's going to kill with those things are scouts,
probably. Yeah,
but it's going to give them a taste for more.
Yeah, All right, so the big topic of the week, Frontier Unlocked number 4, PowerPlay 2.0. For the people that are curious, they put the part of the stream that deals just with this on YouTube. It's 50 minutes long. So you don't have to go through the whole unlock stream to get to it. But wow, they went through a lot on that. So it's a complete soup to nuts overhaul of PowerPlay. And I think they still, what they gave us yesterday was still just a high level overview. They did not give a lot of details. But there were a couple of things that I heard going through that I kind of want to mention that I think might be maybe problem points may not be the way to say it, but are things that I really want to know more about how it's going to work, because I don't have enough information to make a really good decision. And one of those was they were kind of unclear. They said that you do things that your power wants you to do in a system, but they also said that a lot like BGS, everything you do kind of touches power play, which made me wonder, because, you know, one of the problems that exists with BGS is everything you do affects BGS. So it's entirely possible to get a result that you were not intending to do just by playing the game. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we always talk about passing traffic and what it can do in some of the systems. So, you know, am I going to have to be careful what I do to avoid not superheating one of our systems and causing it to try to expand or something? Because they didn't give a lot of details on that. And then the other question I have is, so we're in the middle of Leon Rui space. Let's say I decide to pledge to Aisling because I want to go get prismatics. Well, if now is everything I do in screw space hurting those systems because I'm pledged to another power? That wasn't something that they even touched on. And I think that's kind of important to know. And I also think one of the other, when they were talking about how system invasions and stuff work, they were very keen on mentioning that, you know, you and your group can go and do this. You can find a system and do this. So they've made it a lot more like BGS. There's no central control, or at least they're implying there's no central control really of power play anymore, that all power play occurs organically as people play. And I know we don't talk a lot about power play in here because we're not, none of us are really power play players. But there's a lot of factions that have problem with fifth columns, you know, within their own power play group, you know, basically going rogue and doing their own thing and launching attacks on other power plays and causing real problems. And it sounds
absolutely sounds like that could happen here.
That's sure, yeah. I think they just put that on steroids.
Yeah, they definitely have the potential for gang warfare and tribal warfare inside the Elite universe, which is maybe that's what they want. Maybe
it does. I will say one of the problems with power play is that it's current power play is that it's very static and it really needs a shake up. Mm-hmm. So that there is some movement in it. So that may not be a bad thing. They mentioned your rank system within the power play and said that it does not decay. Great.
That's a good change right there. Yeah.
Fantastic. What happens when I change who I'm pledged to? They didn't mention this. Do I lose all my progress and have to start over?
Yeah.
But they didn't. I mean, I'm assuming that, but they didn't say that.
That'll be interesting to see for sure.
And then the biggest thing they said was right at the end where PowerPlay 2.0 is going to launch with open and solo both available, but they're looking at it and they're open to changing it. That would be huge. Mm-hmm. on a level huge that I don't know I have the vocabulary for. If it got made even something remotely approaching open only, that would be.
I can imagine they would pull that lever completely, but I can certainly picture them saying, you know what, do it in open, it's twice as effective, or, you know, it's 30% more effective, or it's,
I think five times more effective.
Well, I think what they would do is they would say that in solo, it's less effective. I don't think they would ever make.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah.
But, either way, but still,
it was also interesting how they couched that, though, that we're not ready to pull that lever yet because there's enough change between this version coming out versus the old, but you can't compare the two. So they need to get it in place and see how the mechanics work.
And I think that's a very good decision because they're not just making a tweak here. This is an A to Z change. And I would want to sit back and see what happens first too.
Yeah. And also they went out of their way to say that, you know, they're going to be led by what we as players want. I mean, that in and of itself is very different from the usual sort of radio silence mystery about what's going to happen, to say, you know what, we're making some changes and we're really proud of what it's going to be. We think you guys are going to like it, but we're not 100% sure what the impact on the game is going to be. So we'll look and see what happens and see how people engage with it and how people feel about it. And I'm all right with that. I think that's a perfectly responsible answer from a game developer.
With the caveat that as long as they actually do that, I think, you know, they do have a track record of shooting themselves in the foot in that regard. But yes, that's the way I would want them to approach it.
I think it's going to be a lot of fun figuring it out.
Oh, I do too.
Yeah. One of the other big parts of their new plan involves the carrier groups that will show up in formal systems. That it is clear that what they've been working on is essentially a new stage for set pieces for both NPC and player on player combat. You know that they've demonstrated that they can do large instances with lots of ships because of the Titans, and so now you're going to have three or four capital ships with a bunch of NPCs and PCs flying around as a potential arena for, you know, PvP combat or NPCs
You know, just like you have the whatchamacallit, the not super ships, what am I trying to say? The big ships
carrier.
In systems, no, the NPC the ships.
Mega ships,
thank you. That'll spawn scenarios, and then some of those, you know, you have to go and shut down the power relays or steal stuff from them. They're taking all of those mechanics and they're using them with these carrier groups. So these stronghold carrier groups are basically going to be some combination of CZ and an event instance that you can interact with. And I think this is a fabulous idea, especially the fact that you can make them retreat.
As long as you don't spontaneously end up an enemy of the faction you're trying to fight for in one of those megaship scenarios.
Right. Yeah, that would be bad.
Now, there's so much fun, and then they go wrong, and it's terrible.
And they go wrong so fast.
Yeah, it's like, great, we're going to pull all this great stuff from the megaship scenarios, and also, they're all still broken. Sorry.
Because I'll tell you, megaship scenarios are some of my favorite parts of this game. But they are so buggy.
Yeah, see, the first time I discovered them, it was in a system where we were trying to get our influence up or down or something like that. And there was a war going on. And I went in and I just spent like the whole afternoon doing scenarios at this megaship. And I had no idea that they were fundamentally buggy. And so I was, why haven't we been doing this all along? And then like the next three times we tried it, they were disastrous.
Yeah.
But you'd maybe get through one and then they decide you're the enemy and you have to end up going to jail and it turns into a whole waste of time. But the potential is there for some really cool arena style set pieces. You know, you can come in and do some raids on things and
I am really looking forward to the eventual Piranha Knight carrier group attack.
There you go.
I think that's going to be just a tremendous amount of fun. And I hope when this goes live, there are some near us.
I'm sure they'll be aware too.
Because I'm expecting that to be so much fun.
That you should be able to expect to do genuine damage in, like, if you're in a wing and you're in a system that nobody really cares about all that much, but it's got carriers because it's at the stronghold level, that, you know, you could probably in the course of a weekend do some serious genuine damage to the power you don't like in that system.
Yeah.
Which is a very different kind of vibe than deliver 35,000 pamphlets from here, there, and maybe this dot will change color from yellow to blue.
That's where that question of open versus player group now starts to come in, because you've got the feeling in those scenarios, you have some real PvP opportunities defending your carrier group.
Right.
If someone waltzes in there with a player group, you don't have that opportunity. So,
yeah.
Hopefully they can have a way to alert you, because, I mean, it would be nice to know, like, I'm doing something else in game and someone flies into comma, you know, where
they there's like say a that carrier the group live stream, is. They said that there was going to be a lot more information about what's going on right. in the system, right?
Yeah. did say they wanted you to know what other people were doing, so I hope that that will involve some indicator that something's under attack. And especially with these carrier groups, but this goes to power play at large, there has to be a way, if somebody is attacking in solo or private group, there has to be a way for us to counter that that does not involve blowing them up.
Right.
Because if we can't get to them, we can't blow them up. So there has to be another method to counter what they're doing. And they kind of hinted at that, but they really didn't go into it. And that is one of the things that concerns me, because if, like, you know, attacking the power play ships around a carrier group is a very effective way to make them retreat, and it probably will be, because ship murder is very effective in everything. Mm-hmm. Well, then I have to have something that's equally effective at countering that. You know, whatever that is, bringing in reinforcement pamphlets or trade or whatever. But I have to have some way to counter that, because if they're in a private group or in solo, I can't stop them. And I don't have lever to pull.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like, so the other benefit or the other purpose of these stronghold carriers is that it'll be the spot you can go to do power play missions, right? So if that's your concern, you can just go right there and pick up some missions of whatever your particular preference is and do them. And if you're in open, then you run the risk of running into somebody or being able to defend the carrier against somebody. But I think it'll also kind of depend on how the NPCs and the defenses work out, because they also made it clear that if you're there to attack these carriers, it won't be like attacking a Coriolis station where you just get waxed the second you pull the trigger, right? Well, it'll be more like being around one of the megaships where there are some lame seekers chasing you and some beams wailing on you now and then. But
and they have to do it that way so that it's an interactive environment. Otherwise, you know, the defenses would be so strong no one would ever attack them. You know, there has to be some prospect of survival.
Also doesn't seem like there's any type of ground component to this, does it?
At least not that they've mentioned.
They haven't mentioned it, yeah.
Yep.
And I'm wondering about the interface with BGS. Because we're at like the four corners. Someone posted a picture of the four corners out west. I mean, and we're mostly got long Rui space, but we're also in Antal space. We're beginning to expand into Mahan space, and we're in a little bit of a Hudson space.
Yeah.
So,
with a smattering of Yuri Grom on top.
Yeah, we get a little bit of Yuri Grom just above us, and who've, you know, rebuffed a couple of our expansions in that direction. They didn't want us to be coming in because apparently communism and capitalism are incompatible systems.
Yeah. Who knew?
Who knew? Get it right this time. So I'm just worried that, like, you know, the empire we have built is going to be plunged into absolute utter chaos.
Oh, I am too. Well, because one of the things they mentioned was, you know, they were using the, you know, if your power play is economically based, which is, okay, that's Leon Rui, that one of the ways, you know, you could increase the security level, but increase the power play level of your system is by doing trade. Great. That also affects BGS. And, you know, is it is it going to be one of those things that in order to, you know, move a system up the levels in power play from what is it, exploited to fortified to stronghold, in order to do enough to move those levels, you're also going to jack the BGS and, you know, be forcing expansion and a whole bunch of other stuff. That kind of worries me because, you know, right now, power play, because it's all merits and running pamphlets and the other stuff, it's kind of divorced from BGS. And it sounds a separate, like, hopefully, but it sounds like from what they were talking that they've at least blurred the edges somewhat.
I mean, it's a separate mission board.
I hope so. I do hope so, but I'm just going back where they were talking about trade. Yeah, it sounds like there's some overlap, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, how could there not be, right? I can't really imagine that. Like, you don't want it to be two separate games, just like they don't want the Thargoid War to be a totally separate game. So now it's sort of included in all the UI stuff and the maps and whatnot. Like, you can't really imagine a scenario where you're buying something from somebody in one faction and selling it to another, and that would affect BGS, but not power play if they were on opposite sides or something. I mean, it's, yeah.
If
it were my priority to manage the health of our BGS, I would also be quite concerned.
Yeah. Just because then you get that tension between, well, we don't want the faction to expand, so we have to push them down, but pushing them down damages the power play, which we want to push up. And that's not a position you want to put people in, where you have the local factions at odds with the power play, because you get that some now, and that's a real point of irritation. And I would like to see.
Well, at the same time, if you're not on the frontier or a border, you don't really have reason to. I mean, I guess maybe you want to get a stronghold carrier, but I imagine some of that stuff will just kind of be determined by geography. But like, I don't imagine you needing to boost your power play status unless you are, you know, you're going to want to expand someplace, or you're going to be in conflict with somebody else or something like that.
One of the things I love is, so in the current power play, you have command, and there are a lot of places where systems generate negative command capital. So you have a lot of control bubbles within all of the powers, because they all suffer from this, where they don't want it because it's actually a drain.
Mm-hmm.
And they said they completely did away with command capital, and that, you know, the value of a system is based basically on the population primarily, but there's some other factors. So they've made it sound like there's now no longer any such thing as a system that's a drain. It may not add much to the balance sheet, but it's basically a score. So go get all you can get. And, you know, the fact that there were so many crappy systems that nobody wanted that would actually be a detriment to take over is one of the reasons it made Power Play 1 so static. And I think they've gone a long, long way. I mean, based on what they said in one live stream. So, you know, grain of salt here. Yeah. But it sounds like they've gone a long way towards alleviating that particular problem, and that it's going to be a lot more fluid. It sounds like, you know, much like the Thargoid War, it sounds like all the fronts are just going to be fluid all the time.
And it did sound like the different factions very much have a finite number of stronghold carrier deployments that they can manage. That it's like, I don't think
they did say that. To
have every one of your systems in stronghold so that they've all got carriers. It'll be like, you know, it gets driven out of one and moves to another, and each faction starts with five. And if you manage to, you know, get more systems, then maybe your system or maybe your faction gets one extra carrier group they can deploy or something like that. That'll be interesting to see how they manage that as a limitation.
Because yeah.
It turned out to be logistic war game scenario, kind of like what we suspect goes on behind the scenes of the Thargoid War, but in more transparent ways, you know? Like, hey, if we get more systems, then we'll be able to support another set of stronghold carriers. So let's go do that.
The way I'm thinking about it is the stronghold carriers basically now are going to assume the role of Thargoid motherships. each faction only has so many that they can deploy. That would be incredible if they do that. I mean, that would be mind-blowingly awesome if they did that.
And it would make sense to have them near where you want to do your expansion, for instance, if that expansion involves picking up pamphlets at the stronghold carriers and then taking them to the system that you're trying to win over. And that's exactly narrative-wise, that's exactly what they described as the process of trying to win over other systems to your faction. That it was really sort of more about a combination of persuasion and force, but that these stronghold carriers are where you go to pick up the faction-specific propaganda or materials or commodities that you will then use to win over other systems to your side.
And I'm really kind of curious, because right now in Power Play 1.0, so you have control systems for Power Play, and each one of those has it's like a 15 light year radius that it can control systems in. And there's a limited number of systems it can control, too. I forget what that number is. So, like, Mycoro is the Leon Rui power play control system in our area of space. And a whole bunch of the systems that we're in are part of Mycoro's control bubble. But there's also a whole bunch of systems that are technically within range that are not controlled, because Mycoro has hit its limit of controllable systems.
Right.
And it sounds like all of that is going away with Power Play 2.0. They made it sound like there's really no such thing as a control system anymore. So it makes me wonder if some of those holes in our bubble that are independent systems, we could just go in and convert them to Leon Rui.
Mm.
Which would be kind of interesting to do. Because, I'm thinking right now, 640 Cassiopeia. It's a 10 billion population system. And it's independent. And if the value to the power play is based primarily on population.
That's a lot of people.
It's a 10 billion population system. So, that would be something that I would really love to go and convert. If that made a real big impact. So
it's interesting too that this will be kicking in about the time, presumably about the time the Titans get chased out, which means there's going to be this big post-war power vacuum in all these systems that need to be reclaimed and repopulated. Clearly they're setting up for the potential for some direct conflict, but it's also going to take players and player groups time to figure out how this new thing works and what to do with it,
pick up
the low-hanging fruit and decide what the strategic, significant strategic points are going to turn out to be. And
is there a worry that
people actually cared about their power play factions?
Yeah, give me a reason to care about it.
I'm just wondering if is there a worry that a power is going to hit Calorum and all the servers will get shut down?
Always a fear.
No one wants it. It's got space herpes. All right. Is there anything in the dev news we think we need to go back and touch on before we move to Community Corner? I'm going to take that as a no.
It is interesting.
Ooh, yes.
Yeah.
The Type 8.
Oh, yes, the Type 8. Somewhere Volt's heart is all a Twitter. So Arf did mention dropped like a bomb on the way out the door.
That was hilarious.
The Type 8. So apparently that's one of the four ships they're going to release.
I called it for the record. Yeah.
So the Python Mark II, they said August, except you can do the early, right? So that's August for that. And they said four ships for this year. It's going to be a pretty interesting end of the year.
It is.
Now, I thought they said that the Type 8 is going to drop at some point in May.
Like, officially, I thought I heard that too.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
They're bringing it forward.
So speculation, what's the Type 8 going to be?
A Type 7 that fits on a medium pad.
I think it's going to be a Type 7 welded to another Type 7 and called a Type 8. And because we're talking FDEV, it will, of course, have military slots. Because why not? That's what we all need on a cargo ship.
Well, the Type 10 has military slots.
Yeah, the Type 10's not a cargo ship anymore, though.
It'll be a combat Type 7. Like the Type 10 is a combat Type 9.
That's a good point. It could be a combat Type 7. Oh,
like an A-team van with miniguns?
Just like, because the keelback is a combat Type 6. I mean, Bork was just tearing it up in a keelback last night. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was a beautiful thing.
Oh, if that really is a combat oriented Type 6, Volt is going to have a coronary.
Seven.
Volt is going to have a coronary because that man loves him to Type 7.
Type 7 with a better distro and more hard points.
Yeah. And maybe Type 7 has four sized ones. So maybe give it two ones and a two. Two ones and two twos. Spicy.
No, now hear me out. Take a federal gunship hard points and throw all of those on a T-7.
That would be a mom-fed version of the same shit, basically. Yeah.
It's a T-7 with one class 5 spinal mount.
Yeah.
fixed only, but if you do manage to line up on the target, oh boy. Yeah, that's going to be fun to see too. And I don't know if he said May or if he just said you're going to see it coming really soon.
Somebody on the chat actually said May. Type A, May 29th, like 100 times. I think it was probably Lark, like filled the screen with something like that.
Yeah, maybe he did actually say that.
You're right.
So that's going to be really, really cool. Of course, it's going to go on a large pad. You know it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Just because everything goes on a damn large pad. But still, some interesting possibilities there.
So we know what two of the ships are. What does everybody think the other two ships are going to be?
That's a good question. That's a really good question.
There's no obvious gaps right now.
It seems like they'd be inclined to spread them across the various ship makers.
Right. So you're not going to get a Saw Kruger.
Could you imagine a combat Orca?
See, I don't think they're going to go for the small manufacturers, though.
No, probably not. They're doing four, so.
And I don't think they do good Amaya.
I could see a medium type.
I'll bet you one's going to be a medium imperial ship.
I wonder if any of it has to do if any of their thought processes around trying to encourage some kind of parity between the larger factions. You know, even if you can buy whatever ship you want, if you've got power play factions that are going to be fed and power play factions that are going to be imperial, I wonder if there are like holes in the ship assortment and they're like, okay, we got to give the feds a good one to cover this base and we got to give the imperials a new one to fill this part out. It would be kind of an interesting way to think about it.
That's an interesting idea, yeah, because that would make... So where's the hole in the C-class ships?
Well, I mean, you can't get a cutter unless you're deep into the Empire, right?
True.
I don't know what the non-imperial equivalent of something that is the size of a small city. And
well, but I don't see them adding big ships for this. I think they're going to stick with the middle.
I could see a new Anaconda.
The Boa. Revive the Boa from 1984, which was kind of a little bit of a mini Anaconda. A little bit smaller than Anaconda with like a huge butt.
I got two words for you. Panther Clipper.
Oh, I knew it.
You said it. Oh.
Drink. shots.
There goes our ratings.
Yeah.
Although because that's not controversial.
Principle, that means that it won't be out for another year at least, right? Every time somebody mentions it, it bumps back the release date by another, I think, 12 months.
I do think they're going to stay kind of in the middle range. I think they're going to stay away from the really big ships.
It makes sense too. If you're making something new and exciting in a game, you want players to engage with it. And the more mid-range it is, the more people are going to be in the market.
Right.
Want one.
Right. Because you look at the Python Mark II, they took probably the most flexible ship profile there is and decided to make the Mark II out of it. Because the Python can do anything. It doesn't do... You know, it does everything okay. It doesn't really excel at anything, but it can do everything.
Yeah, in that regard, I could picture the Type 8 being like the ultimate deliberator, you know, like an Orca, but for cargo in that same kind of form factor, that it's not as big as a T9, but it's twice as fast.
And I mean, I kind of joked about it having military slots earlier, but I can see them trying to make it like the armed blockade runner.
Especially if that's actually going to be a thing. Like if you need something to get your power plane materials from the stronghold carrier out, and then wherever you're ultimately going, you want something that's going to be a fair deal faster and tougher than a T9.
Right.
Yeah. With a midnight black paint job so no one can see it.
Exactly.
It's a hole in space. Yeah.
Unless they're in within 500 kilometers.
Yeah. The dark paint job, shielded drives, shielded power plant, runs cold, no shield. It's just a hole in space. All right.
Mostly of glass.
All right. So moving on to Community Corner. See, somebody put on here that the Elite Dangerous people have now created a tool so other people could design their own adventures.
No way.
Ooh. Yes. So I put that on that. And...
Well, then tell us about it, Mr. Grover.
So I don't know fully. I've been on their site today and looking at it, but it seems like they will walk you through it. You submit your adventure to them and they'll... put it through a quality check process, and then if it's suitable, they'll host it. So it's not one where...
That'll be cool.
Yeah. I don't think it's one where you could... I don't know yet whether you could host it yourself, possibly. But it opens up a huge amount of potential to our creative community to contribute to these awesome kind of missions. And I could see us... I'd be keen to... contribute and do a welcome to Screw Space one. So for any new Screw Space members, you can run off and do a mission and learn a little bit about our sorrowed history and where all the bones are buried.
Yep. Yeah.
Come.
And that, if anybody who's listening who has not visited the Elite Dangerous, their French community, you need to go and check that out because that's really awesome. And it's entirely fan generated, and they have put a spectacular amount of work into some of that, and it's just amazing. You need to go.
It's such a great example of the thriftiness of Elite Dangerous too. You know, we're talking about like reusing all these game mechanics they have in the Thargoid War and reusing the megaship scenarios. That there's just all this phenomenal creative stuff already out there in the game. But what they do is find these, you know, three or four recordings that are out there from 10 years ago and weave them together into a story so that you go and find a few things. And, you know, we have all these installations and tourist beacons and things that are just kind of there to be seen. And the fact that they can make an interactive experience where you're seeing things that have been in the game all along or that, you know, that you just didn't know were there are all of a sudden part of some new compelling, exciting story that the devs aren't making. You know, they've made the game and it's there. And just one more example of Elite players making life better for everybody who plays the game and knows to look for it. It's absolutely worth checking out. It's like free DLC.
Good segue for the next item.
Commander Indigo, tell us about Buckyball.
So the eighth season of Buckyball, believe it or not, is starting day after tomorrow. The first race of, I think there are eight total, is called the Sidewinder Trophy, and it's a little love song to our favorite little tiny hockey puck of a ship. Commander Sulu is sponsoring the race, and it's kind of a Buckyball classic style. You have to fly someplace, fly through an installation, go someplace else. This one has one little added wrinkle where you land at Dab's Hope and have to get out of your ship and jump over the gantry and then get back in and fly off. But like all Buckyball races, there's a regulation category where you're flying a stock Cobra in spite of the name of the race. In this case, it's still the Cobra. Or the unlimited one where usually you can fly whatever you want. In this case, you can fly whatever variety of Sidewinder you want, however much engineering you put into it. That starts on Saturday. You can find it on the forum or on the Buckyball Discord. Is a lot of fun, too. There are a bunch of great people there. But the way the whole season operates, once a month there is a race, and the race runs for a solid week, during which you can record it and or take screenshots and submit your time. And at the end of that period, they announce the winners, and everybody has a grand time. I'm hosting the second race in the series, which will be next month. It's not actually in Screw's Pace for reasons that will be apparent when I tell you all about it, but it is going to be sponsored by Niebla's Artisanal Tritium. So we'll be representing Screw's Pace either way. But yeah, so if you're at all interested in driving yourself crazy for 1 week a month for the foreseeable future, think about checking out Buckyball. I think Volt might be coming along. I think they got Lark talked into it. And yeah, it'd be nice to have some other folks to commiserate over all of the shenanigans.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else we need to cover before we wrap this up? Going once, going twice.
Oh, Trax got Triple Elite, I think, right? Didn't he?
Trax,
didn't he
finally get that? Congratulations, Trax.
Triple Elite, finally. Long time coming. Only took him 10 years. I mean. Mm-hmm. Just in time.
Yeah, he's been dragging.
Got to start working on his power player loyalty rating. So
right, he's taking the power play too. So this is
huge.
Power play 2.0 is going to mean a lot to him for sure.
Yeah, he's going to be at the top of all those leaderboards. He's going to be starting alt, so he can be at the top of multiple leaderboards at the same time.
Hey,
I hope I did just give somebody ideas.
That's why we have all.
There you go. Sure, that's the reason. All right.
We didn't even talk about the leaderboard thing. We'll get around to that before they actually kick it off, I'm sure. But yeah.
Oh, we should probably also give a big shout out to Mrs. Trax.
Yes,
Congratulations.
Right.
So Trax is not on today because she is graduating with her master's degree in, I believe, psychology or counseling or something like that. And she's going to be starting her own psychology business.
Yep, she is walking across the stage tonight. So congratulations, Mrs. Trax.
If she does it online, because she's got a big customer base, just some Loose Screws members.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, God, no. We want her to walk before she runs, and this is definitely the deep end of the pool here.
Sorry we broke you.
This is the crazy end of the pool down here. She needs to ease into that. All right. Let's wrap this up. All right. If you like this podcast, please leave us a review on your favorite podcast player. You can join our Discord by going to discord.io/loosescrews. And don't forget to head over to loosescrewsed.com to find our merch store and get all sorts of crazy stuff. So for Commander Oblivious, Commander Mr. Indigo, Grover Kiwi from Down Under, and Commander Bloomingwind, I am Commander Nurgle. We thank you for your time tonight. Ours is done here. Everybody say good night.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.